Okay, so this is Sachin and this is Dr. Chetna. We are just having a conversation regarding meditation for our notes and just a brainstorming recording here, right? So the word meditation, in my mind, when I hear that word, the first word that comes to mind, my mind is dhyan. And this is the image that comes in my mind. And see what this is. The image that comes is you take a container of oil. And you take an empty container, and then you pour the oil from one container to another, and that flow, that is unbroken flow, that is dhyana. Mm-hmm. So this image is described in some of the scriptures. So in my mind, this is one thing that comes up. You know, that it's an unbroken flow of thoughts and emotions and feelings towards God, theistically. Mm-hmm. So personally, I would say as a believer in God, as a believer in theistic God, that there is God actually. So in that theistic sense, keeping the mind on God, like we say Shiva, or we say Devi, or we say whoever, gurus, you know, we are meditating on them, just like what she was saying right now, right? So the image that comes is the ultimate state is where the entire mental structure is absorbed in God consciousness. This is in my mind. This is the first thing that comes into my mind. Go ahead, yes. I don't know what thoughts come to your mind about this or anything else.
Just the word meditation?
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, the meditation means essentially that really by emptying your mind of whatever thoughts are coming and everything and going into that real space of calmness and serenity, which is very much, which feels good, essentially, going by your emotional GPS, that's basically because, again, we're talking about a real self as beyond the mind and the body. So mm-hmm. you get to that state which you're literally emptying your mind of thoughts by either observing them, like going through and they stop coming in, or by focusing on a chant or a mantra or God's name, or whether it's a specific Bija mantra or a specific Om or anything like that, right, which helps you because you're trying to integrate your energies automatically. That's one way of saying that, okay, this is another way of calming down all your energies and the thoughts go away. So basically really getting to your real self, which is your true nature, and that is calm, collected, feels free, doesn't feel like bound. Mm-hmm. It is weightless. So that is a state we want to experience because it's almost like freedom of thoughts which bind you to certain things, make you feel guilty, make you feel you're not enough, make you feel there is so much to do, which is all your thoughts causing this stressful things which are there, but you don't have to be feeling like that about those things. So that's what it leads to. So that is the ultimate state to be in. And that's what, to me, is meditation. So trying to become basically familiar with a state which feels like that is the real you, which feels very, very, very familiar, meaning that you resonate with. And you automatically know in your conscience that this is me. This is the real me. And that's where you want to get. And that's the only way, by emptying your mind or getting away from your thoughts, basically.
So what you're talking about is realizing who one is, the self-realization. What I was mentioning about is about connecting the mind to God. Mm-hmm. Do you see a difference between these two things? Or are they aiming at the same using a different approach?
It's there is no difference, but it's a different method. Okay, or a technique.
So what's the difference?
So the thing is, for human beings, most of the human beings, including me, it is very difficult to meditate on a formless, like a nebulous thing, which you just can't get a handle of it. For example, if you look at the vast sky, you feel scared. If you look at the vast ocean, it is almost like you can't control it. You don't have like a hold on it.
Yeah.
So it is difficult to focus on any, to connect to something like that. If one can, that's awesome. That is the real, meditative state. Uh-huh. So when you connect to a deity or God, whether it's a certain form, whether it's a woman
conception.
Right. Yeah. A conception of a form, yeah, which could be in any form, even if it's a human form.
Yeah. Or even like a spiritual master. Some people believe.
Exactly. Ascended masters, whoever. You are basically trying to, what are we trying to do in meditation is really bring out that vibrational state which we should be resonating with all the time. And so sometimes when you connect with a master or goddess or God or whoever it is, you do it, it just becomes a natural thing. It becomes easier for people to get attached to. Because mm-hmm. if you look at life, human beings easily get attached to their father, their mother, their brother, their sister, their children, all of that, because you consider them as your own.
Sure.
And when you do that to a deity and build that personal relationship, sure. it just becomes easier to focus on something like that and bring about that love, which is universal love or unconditional love, mm-hmm. which enhances your, you know, state, inner state, to the real you, essentially. So it's just an easier form for most people. So that is the first form, in fact, of connection to, you know, first kind of meditation we connect to a personal God or deity or a master or anything like that.
So that is, in a more dualistic sense, more theistic sense, is based on belief that yes. you believe that there's God. You know, the various religions of the world that are theistic in this sense, they are all centered in this notion in some form or another, right? But what about what you were saying before, those who are just interested in self-discovery? Like if I, for example, I'm Sachin, I'm sitting in front of you right now, and if somebody was to ask me, who are you? Well, I'll say, well, this, I think that this body is me. But then I say, wait a minute, yeah, there's a mind inside. And then I kind of get stuck over there. So you're talking about something even beyond the mind. So could you elaborate on what that would mean as far as meditation goes, if it's not theistic in nature? Somebody doesn't believe in God. They're not interested in God or in religions or whatever. What approach is taken in that way?
Yeah, so the best thing, at least so far what I've known, is art of observation or self-observation. And the best thing when you meditate really is to sit quietly, observe your breath, literally not deep breaths or anything, just your normal breath. And let's start with the body, because it's easier to observe your body. So you observe your breath, how they go up and down. And that's one part. You know, observe your heartbeat. You know, it may not be possible in the beginning, but you know it's beating. Then you look at and, you know, think about how your each muscle feels in your body from your head to toe. You know its presence, but you, even if you don't see them, so it's there. So that's one way of looking at it. And then the second way is to say, I'm observing my mind. And what does that mean? That means that you're observing your thoughts, basically awareness of thoughts. And of course, a stream of thoughts are going to come in the beginning. But then when you start observing them, they disappear after a while. And then what? What is left? There is something, a void or like a space, a quietness or calm, which is something beyond it. Because if you can observe your mind and your thoughts, you are beyond that. And that gives you an idea about how you live your daily life based on your mind telling you and the thoughts created from your mind different things. So the more aware, and then that will give you an idea about how you can be aware during the day about your thoughts, which will give you the impact, gives you the power to change them as the way you want to. So it's almost like you become the master of you, your mind and your body, rather than your mind, you know, being your master, which keeps going up and down and creates these thoughts. So obviously each thought, because of history behind it, because of the past, or what you have conceived as an idea from what you've been through, or from the media, or from people who've told you, and formed your belief systems, and that start giving you these emotions, these feelings, which is negative, which is of anxiety, which it doesn't feel good. So it's all starting from the mind, essentially. So the more you go into that space, you're less affected by your mind, or they even don't start creating these thoughts anymore. Of course, it takes time to get there, but that's the idea anyway. So periodically, again, like anything else, the more persistent you are, the more you persevere, to, you know, do meditation and get to this state. That's why the tools which we talk about on during the day is very important. Of course, meditation is important during the morning and, you know, evening when you go, or at night when you, before you go to bed. But a lot of times people forget even to breathe during the day, because that's how much they're going go, go, go. And the mind tells them and they have things to do. And, you know, that's what, you know, stresses them out. So if you really, it's not like, and this doesn't mean you don't, you become quiet and become a hermit and go into like a space. No, it just gives you an idea about pulling us back periodically and from the mind wandering off and creating this, you know, the anxiety or the stress. So you could really be in the present moment, every moment, and still achieve everything you want, your desires. So, it's not like you have to give them up.
So that just leads to a question here. Are you talking about energizing the mind where the mind is steady and silent and clear, but it's filled with energy, as opposed to a dull mind? Because yes. Because some people may get the impression, or may even maybe in their experience, that the more they just kind of are in isolation or meditation, just kind of sitting in nature for long periods, some people say, I'm just getting bored, I'm just dull, just, you know, I feel like doing something, I'm activity oriented, right? So could you reflect, just give some reflections on that?
Yeah, see, that is again the mind's creation. So whether you are, you know, not doing anything versus you want to be in action. That's because you've created that belief system that you should be a certain way. And where is that coming from? It's coming from the mind again. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is that we built or we have formed all these concepts because, again, from our, you know, senses which have experienced all this stuff. So again, it's coming from the mind. So it's not that. It's basically periodically when you go to that space, you don't let the mind become your master. Mm-hmm. You are in charge. You use the mind as an instrument for analyzing, for, you know, reflecting on things and problem solving and performing, or however you want to do. And that's what we want to do, because we want to be, the real you wants to be the master, not the mind being your master. So you're in charge, essentially.
Mm-hmm. See, when you mentioned the real you, which is the master, which is the mastery of the mind, the one that is controlling the mind, the one that is directing the mind, are you saying that this type of you know, meditation on the self is a discovery of the real you?
Absolutely.
So that discovery is where that space exists, right? That space. So could you talk a little bit more about what you mean by discovery, and what is that space? Because if in our normal life, we have thoughts and we kind of sense that there are different thoughts coming and going and stimuli, but we're kind of just caught in that whole vortex. But when you're talking about something beyond that, that is a discovery of that space. So could you talk about that space? What do you mean by the space and then the real you? Could you say something about that?
Yeah, so the real you and the space for me is similar. It's not separate.
Okay.
In my experience, at least. So why, what is it? Is it, it's only experienced when you're free of thoughts. There mm-hmm. is no way to experience when you're in the middle of the thoughts, because the thoughts take over. And you think that whatever the disturbance or anything which the thoughts create, you assume that that is you and that is the personality.
Yeah, right.
But exactly. That is not the advantage of getting into that space and knowing the real you will give you more clarity about where you're going.
So that space all has that clarity. Mm-hmm. So an individual's identity, psychological identity, personality, is their identity. So for example, this is Sachin. So I say, this is my personality, or this is my identity. This is my name. This is my background. But all of that isn't me. It's mine, but it's not me. Right? So could you say?
So you possess these qualities. You have these identities, but it is not you. If you believe that you are an energy being or a soul or whatever you want to call it, then you are not. You assume this body for this lifetime, because we know anybody who's born has to die. Yeah. So it is a limited time for this body in general and the mind, because once we die, we have no mind or the body. So it's just the energy which remains. Mm-hmm. And so the mind and the body for this lifetime is what you want to get a handle of. But we don't know that unless you go and meditate and go into experiencing that there is something beyond this body and the mind.
Yes, because we are very much caught up in experience that is generated from the outside stimuli, whether it is a pleasure experience or a dysphoric experience, or, you know, the dislike for someone, like for someone, the polarities, the pairs of opposites, like the Gita even talks about, and even the Bible talks about that in different ways. I mean, other scriptures, but in psychology, we can say that the mind is also, it runs on a valence. You know, the emotional swinging back and forth. All of this is what humanity is constantly in.
Yeah.
Is it not so?
Absolutely. That's because we have five senses, and each of these senses perceive like antennas mm-hmm. from the environment. So, but if we know who we are, then it's easier to see that it's something which is coming into you mm-hmm. and be in more in balance about how you want to react to that, or how do you want to perceive it even. But what happens if you don't, then all the senses fire similarly at the same time, and you are taking in, and it's like a discordant machine.
Sure, it's a mechanism.
So it's almost like, even if you say technology-wise, if there's five antennas, everything is perceiving different things, and it's whatever it makes up in like conglomeration of, you know, things, you don't know what it is, but you're feeling it. You're feeling a little of that, a little of this, little of something else. So you can't make any sense of it. Mm-hmm. But when you know that you are that space, or that, you know, amazing, you know, energy being, what you can do is you can channel them separately with clarity. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, you know, this is what I want to feel at this time.
Right.
And that's what gives you that, you know, less of the stress, or more calmness, as to, you know, where you're directing these. It's not that you don't experience these senses. You do. But let's say, for example, you're sitting down for a meal.
Yeah.
That's why we tell you to do only eat the meal, experience it, enjoy the meal, and with your senses, with your taste buds, experience the whole thing. Now, there's only joy in it. But if you're trying to watch a movie, or having, you know, people talking to 10 people at the same time and eating, I don't think you're enjoying everything. You may, on the whole, you may say, okay, it was a good experience, but are you really enjoying every bit of it?
Right.
Even for having a good experience in the of your being, of your body, or your mind, you want to be able to do this. And that's more possible when you know, first of all, that you are somebody, you are something else, and then you're going to use these senses to your advantage, rather than the senses doing its bit and not, you know, you just being a slave to it, or, you know, I guess that's the best way to put it.
Right. So if a person progresses along a meditative path, as part of the five pillars that you have been talking about, the first one is meditation. There is greater and greater balancing that should happen physically, psychologically, because the mind is not constantly tormented by overstimulation, by hyperactivity of different types. Is that so?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you say about that?
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. So the introspection comes with awareness of all these things that are going on.
Yeah.
So when you stop and think about, not think about, be aware of these thoughts where it's going, you can do something about it. Firstly, you can say, oh, it's just a thought, so I'm not going to get deeper into it and bring on a charge to it, which is causing this emotion or feeling. Second thing is, you are saying that, you know, second thing is, you know, you can channel them with one thing at a time, which causes less, you know, less stress in general, anxiety.
Definitely. And as you're talking about anxiety, stress, etc., there is a desire for a lot of people to silence the mind, you know, to get away from the life's problems and get away from distress and get away from XYZ, right? So what is meant by silencing the mind? Because if you look at medications, when you're medical doctors, you know about this better than I do. There's all kinds of psych meds and different kinds of medications to kind of bring about a state of calmness or induce some kind of a psychological state. You know, how does that compare to a mind that has reached silence through meditation? Could you draw that distinction? Because the reason I'm asking this question, I think, you know, people want to be disturbance free. Let's just put it that way, in a more simpler way. Well, the mind that is disturbed versus the mind that is not disturbed, the mind that is more silent, more integrated, right? Mm-hmm. So there's in my mind, there's that distinction. So could you elaborate on that? And just as a corollary, you know, how does that compare to medications that are trying to do the same thing or something similar to that? I don't know, maybe I'm asking that right or not, but.
So disturbed mind versus silent mind,
yeah,
is disturbed mind is because we identify with every thought. So it's almost impossible to get identified with every thought at the same time.
What do you mean by identified with thought? Okay, so let's break that up a little bit.
Yeah, so let's say we have a thought coming as you have to do something, you have a memory or something or whatever. Yeah. There is something coming up, you have to go to a meeting. And then at the same time, you have this thought about, okay, after I go home, I have to do this with my child. Then, you know, you have this, okay, next week I have to do this. And then whatever, the goals come all at you at the same time. Mm-hmm. Now, it's almost hard to not identify all with all these thoughts because you have to do all of them. And that becomes a disturbance because you don't know which one to identify.
Right.
And then it's overwhelming to think about all the thoughts at the same time.
Exactly.
So that's an example of a disturbed mind.
Sure.
But then what do you mean by silenced mind? So with meditation, what happens is when you go into that space, you don't have to firstly block it off for a moment and say, take deep breaths. And then you say, okay, I know how to get calmer first, go into that frame, you know, in deeper way. Now I know I have to do all this. Do I have to do all of this at the same time? No. So what is the first priority that I have to do? So let me channel my energy to this one thing. Mm. And then once I'm done with this, then I go to the next thing, which is the priority. And then the next priority. You know, when you start doing this, it's almost like channeling your mind and energy.
Yes.
You just gain control over all the situations. So it's not like you're not doing everything. It's still doing everything, but it's like being in the present moment. This is the one thing, channeling, compartmentalizing, however you want to call it, because there is only a certain amount of energy which you have.
Mm-hmm.
So when the mind does these different thoughts which take up energy, before you need you're mentally exhausted with the disturbed mind.
Mm-hmm.
But with a silent mind, or you can call, you know, knowing how to channel your energy or your mind, using your mind, like I was telling you,
mm-hmm,
before, like as an instrument,
as a tool.
Exactly. So you can really do, you know, be more focused one thing at a time, and then you're focused on the next part, and then the next, and then the next. So what happens with this? Firstly, there is clarity. Then you achieve a lot more in a smaller amount of time. So it's almost like, where did the time, how did it expand?
Yes.
Because you have more time. So you might finish your job even earlier to do 10 more jobs in the same time period.
Exactly.
But if I'm doing this and I'm thinking of 10 different things, it's impossible to achieve everything. So there is no thing called multitasking. It is almost like a myth. Because you have multiple tasks to do,
yes,
but you cannot multitask.
Sure.
So it is makes a difference.
That's a very important distinction,
yes,
as far as the practicality of the kind of meditation you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. So that is the difference when somebody who's meditating and somebody who's constantly being aware of the thoughts. That's
mm-hmm
why it's not only enough to meditate. That's why we talk about the five pillars.
Yes.
So that's why it's important to do this. Again, how do you use this mind? Again, these thoughts are going to come. When you do these affirmations and keep saying, okay, I am in charge. I'm in the present moment. This is the only thing I can do. So only this is all I'm going to focus on. So those are kind of affirmations too. So introspection is, again, awareness thoughts. Where are they going? Then service is important. The only reason we talk about service is because you feel that oneness in the whole universe. You're not feeling alone. You're not the only person who's having all these stressful thoughts and everything. If you're a part of the whole being, you're just, you know, and you can see the bigger picture, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You're not so focused in your head that you are the only one who has to do all these things. So you get a bigger picture, seeing the forest for the trees kind of thing.
Very much so.
You know, you pull yourself
so
back.
I have a question about that. That's a very powerful statement. I think many people have heard that about seeing the bigger picture, keeping a broader vision. But this is a movement of consciousness into that greater vision, seeing the bigger picture of the mind itself, like what's within me, what's all, you know, my own personal content, the different materials that are stored inside the mind. I can see all of that, let's say, I can see a lot of that. And then beyond that even is the interconnections across the board. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. So that only comes when you meditate. If you go into that space, then you can look at yourself, look at your thoughts, look at all these things and look at the world, what is going on, how are you a part of it, how are you, what is your role in the whole, you know, because the feeling of belonging to a bigger, I don't know what to call it, bigger community or bigger human population, just gives you that more empowerment to say that I'm a part of this whole thing. I'm not alone.
Because we're all together all the time.
Your sense of belonging to a bigger community, bigger family, extended family, mm-hmm. not just your son or your daughter or your brother and sister, but it's humanity in general. Mm-hmm. So that gives you a better perspective of, because again, as you've seen in, I think it's all over the world, loneliness as you get older is a big deal because you've been thinking so narrow over the period of time that you just, you know, it becomes a mindset. So loneliness is a mindset. It is not thing. You know, it's not real.
It's like a contracted mind.
Exactly. So being alone is different, or being in isolation is way different from being lonely, you know. So you can be alone and still feel you're a part of the world by, you know, doing more introspecting and meditation. Mm-hmm. But loneliness is something which you feel like there's nobody for me. It's because they're not, because you're so involved in this body, in this mind. And so you feel like you're alone and there's nobody in it and you're meant for doom and you're going to die anytime. Right. And those are all the mindset which comes with it. That needs to change, and that only changes when you start doing that when you're much younger.
Definitely. And that, so then in the five pillars discussion, the importance of service is connected to what you're saying.
Exactly. The service comes with that. So people have to experience it. Coming away from that, it's not easy for some people. It's very difficult for some people. But again, this is like anything else. It grows. The more you do, the more you want to do. Right. And then once you start doing and seeing the benefits of it, it's enormous. And again, remember, you're doing it without expectation. You're not doing it with expectation that they would do something else in return at some point in time. Sure. Because that is a disappointment. That never happens the way you imagine. And then that's why people don't end up doing anything else.
Very much.
That is not what we're talking about. In the whole scheme of things, we are giving because we feel like we're a part of this universe. In fact, all the great leaders always ask, what can we give to the country? What can we give to the world? Then what can I get from the world? Or what is in it for me? Mm-hmm. You know, because it's amazing when you do these things in giving, the amount you get out of it is high, much more like 1,000-fold than what you give. And this is not monetary. This is not, you know, based on money or, you know, whatever the commodity you get from. It's a feeling. It's just an emotional state which uplifts, which brings you up, which is very, which is not, can be explained. It cannot be put in words.
It's experiential.
Absolutely experiential. And that is a transformational time for people when they experience that.
So meditation is one pillar. We talked somewhat about that. We talked about service just now. We talked about introspection also. Could you elaborate a little bit on the connection between introspection, or what do you mean by introspection?
So
then these other points.
So introspection is just going deeper and seeing, like I said, at the end of the day, you reflect on what your actions were. Did my day go the way I wanted it to go? Or was it something I could do better? And that is one part of it. But being aware of your thoughts on a regular basis, even during the day, is a very key of it.
Because, that's an introspection. Yeah.
Yes, because every time you're aware, you know you can change it. If something is wrong, you say, hey, wait a minute, where are my thoughts going? I need to change this thought this minute, and I can. And you are empowered to do that. Only you can.
So introspection leads to a type of decision that is beneficial for one.
Exactly. And it allows you to not be in that loop. For example, when you're angry with somebody, you always think all the negative aspects of that person, and you're so angry, it's loop after loop of, you know, like connections.
Like strengthens.
It strengthens that loop and it becomes conditioned over time. Right. But if you're aware of it, you break it right there. Mm-hmm. And then you change it and say, wait a minute, I could look, somebody could be looking at my all the my faults and finding fault with me. And then I need to change it. And yes, I'm going to tell that person that I don't like it, but you don't have to start forming this opinion, which strengthens as you go along by talking about, by thinking more and more about it.
So introspection leads to greater awareness of dumping toxic thinking, right?
Would you say? Exactly, exactly. Because thoughts make, negative thoughts create negative everything, hormones, neurotransmitters, and hence the chemical imbalance in your body.
Right.
And we prevent that too by convert it. So you're thwarting that whole process and you're just not allowing it to happen. So, and it helps your mind, so it helps your body. So it's almost like a no-brainer. Like, you know, it happens on, it's like a side effect.
So it's almost like introspection is where the negative thought loops and then, of course, all the reactions, the emotional reactions, these things dissipate. And then positivity comes about by service and by good company and different forms of good activity, meditative activity, physical activity, so many things. And then from there, the possibility may exist for what we would call spiritual realization, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you want to say
something. Absolutely. So I don't know that part either, but all I know is it just brings you a self of immense kind of like a part of this vast humanity, makes you a, such an integral part of it, which makes you feel very, very, it's heartwarming. And open and heartwarming to say that you are a crucial part of this whole being and you're not, you know, so bottled up in your own thoughts. Actually, when you do service, the best part is you're really not in your head. And that's what creates problems.
Yes.
So you are always thinking about what can I do for others? What can I do here? What can I do there? So you're less in your head, basically. So it doesn't actually allow you to get give negative thoughts and to make that loop. Because why do negative thoughts happen? When you don't consider a part of that other person or an extended version of that other person.
So it's by doing service to others, by introspecting, by meditating, by going through a process of dumping all the toxicity. First of all, to dump it, one has to recognize
it. Yes, exactly.
And
that's the introspection we're talking about. Yeah. To recognize, to be aware is number one. Then you are able to dump it.
Yeah.
So that's that. And the final one is basically the good company we're talking about.
Right.
You want initially, now you, if you're a saint and if you reach a certain state where you don't care who's around you, that's different. But we are all, like I said, antennas. So we do absorb things from without even knowing. This is unconscious. We absorb a lot of things and that goes into subconscious and that keeps coming up as, you know, all these attributes we don't even realize which we have.
Sure.
Like it comes and springs upon you.
So very much there's a great sense of positive emotion. There's harmony, there's balance, good family life. There's a sense of well-being overall, right?
Mm-hmm.
So from that stage, is there the possibility of divine thought, divine emotion, transcendental thought, the higher consciousness thought?
Definitely, because imagine, what are we doing here? If you are thinking about yourself as a part of the large universe, that means you could have the whole universe be a part of you.
Definitely.
So that is the vastness. That is divine.
So which is way beyond simply a balanced positive, because then the balanced positive well-functioning life, which is also rare, that becomes fairly ordinary.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why there is this, there is this saying or whatever in the Buddhist tradition, somebody asks, how do you feel once you're enlightened?
Yeah.
What do you do now? Sorry, let's begin with the beginning, like before enlightenment.
Yeah.
So he said, in the monastery, the monk said, chopping wood and, filling water. And then what do you do after? It's the same thing, chopping wood and filling water. But the sense with which you do is a change. And I think that's what we're trying to do here.
Well, absolutely. So for example, if I go to Longwood Gardens, which I like to go to, mm-hmm. you know, from time to time, and I see a beautiful rose or some beautiful flower in the conservatory, yeah, our normal reaction is, how this is very nice, it smells nice. That's at the sensory level. Mm-hmm. But the same thing, if these five pillars are really in my life, let's say, such an, you know, if this is really genuinely, honestly there, and I take a walk in there through that really balanced and harmonized state, now the experience is even much more enhanced. Even the sensory experience mm-hmm. is more enhanced, right? Could you say about yes. the sensory experience? Yes. So it's really not running away from sense experience.
No, it's not at all. It's more refined.
Yeah, some refinement, yes.
Yes, it's more refined because you're paying attention mm-hmm. to each of the senses. And so you're experiencing the humanness. You're experiencing the humanity to the hilt. You are not even, we're not even talking about enlightenment. Forget that. Yeah, you know, you don't, yes. that's something which we don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of
but just refining your experiences in life, it helps with that. Because you're not, you know, you're not going to do something to, let's say, taking a walk in Longwood Gardens and not looking at anything.
Of course.
And thinking about 1,000 things which you have to do in the future.
Exactly.
Or the past. Exactly. Because that's what happens.
Well, that's what happens to people, because if the environment may be the same, it might be the same beautiful conservatory and in a
you
beautiful
could be
garden.
The best place ever, but if you don't have your mind and, yeah. you know, the refinement, you're not going to enjoy this place.
So the joy that we are referring to, and we haven't used that word in our discussion yet, but I think the five pillars, would you say that they are foundational to the flowering of joy, to the opening
absolutely.
Of joy, as opposed to just waves of pleasure and pain?
Yes.
You know, so
yes,
would you
absolutely.
Distinguish between these two?
Joy is something which is inherent, which is, comes from that space we're talking about.
Yes.
The pleasure is temporary because yes. that comes through your senses.
Right. So if I smell a rose, I say, this is very nice. But if I just keep smelling a rose, eventually I get saturated. Mm. Eventually I'll put it away. When I first smell the rose the first time, that like, wow, this is nice. That feeling is not the same the third or fourth or fifth time I smell it.
Yes, absolutely. The reason is because, again, where is the joy emanating? It is inside of you. But unfortunately, what we do with pleasure, you know, things, we at least in our mind, we are thinking that
that is the thing.
That is the thing which brings us happiness or mind, you know, the pleasure,
yeah.
Which is temporary. But it's not. If we go inwards and bring the joy already, we know it's already in there. We do not need that object to bring us that happiness.
Right.
But it also helps us enjoy it and just not be attached to it. So saying that we have to go to that object only to get that joy or the experience.
So are you saying that the pleasure that we experience is because there is joy? That we actually are that joy, or and because of consciousness, joy, because that's life is there, we experience pleasure. If we were not alive, we wouldn't experience pleasure also, or pain for that matter. Mm-hmm. You know, so the experiencer, whoever is experiencing, like through meditation, you talked about the space, right?
Right.
And then to discover who you really are. So in that discovery, the pleasure and the pain are within the mind. But as we move beyond that, through the five pillars, are you talking about the discovery of joy, actually, not just at the verbal level?
It's not verbalized. It cannot be verbalized at all. It is much more than that. It's not even a temporary feeling.
Exactly.
It's like a continuous state of being.
Being. It's a continuous state of being. But most people are generally trying to enhance pleasure or enhance its stimulation. You know, one thing to another, one thing to another.
Again, that's because you think that is like a false presentation
uh-huh.
or a false perception.
Definitely.
That the mind has, that this is what brings me this feeling and that is what brings me that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, I heard that one of the monks talking about, let's say it's a piece of cake or
yes.
you know, an Indian sweet, whatever you love eating.
Right.
You're going to eat one and then you feel good. You're going to eat two, then you feel okay, that's good. When you feel three, when you go to four, then you five, before you feel that you're nauseous, you don't want to eat that anymore.
Exactly.
If that is the sweet or the cake, which is a permanent thing which would give you happiness, why does it feel like that after a while?
Exactly.
It's not. So that's not true.
So it's the mind's
perception that's happening.
Yeah.
So it's important for us to know that it's already in you.
Definitely.
But that is not the reason for that.
But there is a place for enjoyment in life. Absolutely.
Without being attached to it.
Would you be saying then that if, in theory, let's say, or in practice, the five pillars are there, the enjoyments just of daily experiences are much enhanced, but also we see the pains of the world, the problems of the world. How does a person respond to them if the five pillars are there?
Give me an example.
Well, I mean, you see homeless people, you see sick people, you see people who are suffering, you see malnutrition, you know, you see the poverty in the world, you see the destruction, the violence that is there in many parts of the world, you know, there's slums and this all this negative reality, this negative type of life, this really very limited and very, very painful type of life. What is the response to that through the five pillars?
So it helps you understand where they're coming from and their suffering. You can feel the suffering. You can feel what they're going through, mm-hmm. probably at a deeper level than you would have otherwise, because most of us try to build this wall around us so that we don't feel anything.
So there's a lot of sensitivity that's kind of Absolutely. Awakened through the five pillars.
And that sensitivity will allow you to do your best for them. You're not
right.
telling them your whatever your experience and you should be doing that or you should be right. doing that. You should be attaining, you know, meditating
good,
and everything.
Thinking for them is
yeah. So, but at that point, your duty is to just help them alleviate their suffering at that point.
Sure. Right. Because it seems to me that most people who are, you know, just in their day-to-day routine, they are trying to balance out their life. They're trying to live a better life. And if they can, if people can keep their attention on building their family, their you know, their immediate family to a greater extent, having a better flow in day-to-day life, and then keep this broader vision also, because there are some extremely terrible things that are out there, and there's some extraordinary, wonderful experiences of life also, things like nature, like the Grand Canyon, Niagara Falls, you know, just natural sights, Smoky Mountains, or listening to a beautiful musical piece, or so there's these refined types of pleasures or enjoyments, and then there are some really painful, devastating realities of life. Life also, so there's a whole range of things, right? So the five pillars. Could you talk about how the vision of this changes? You know, this broader vision you talked about before, also, and personally.
Yeah, so there is a spectrum, of course, from you know where you see there's all kinds of things, but that is life. So that is just. You know, life, all the contrasts which are there in life. So it'll give you a perspective about what life can be. And, you know, that's because, again, individuals, human beings, you know, through their choices, you know, how their mind works and, you know, what their actions do, we are all responsible as a collective consciousness to bring about these miseries or these joys. So you know that you are a part of it too, but at that point, whatever you can do, you know, for that person will be your service, you know, for that person. Beyond that, you know, you can only work on yourself.
Yes, that's what I was getting to. Right,
you cannot change anything, but you can work on yourself and have that perspective in a different way
That's what I'm asking you about. What is that different perspective?
Well,
as you're working on yourself.
Yes, so the perspective is you are going to help whoever needs your help. You just go and do what you can.
So like think globally, act locally.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Wherever you go, you just keep, you know, helping and people. Mm-hmm. If people are open enough, then you can guide them to a better state of mind or a better state of consciousness.
Right.
And
so,
do that. But again, you can't do it with everyone.
No, but the one thing that would be happening is the person who's doing this is developing himself or herself.
Exactly.
Which is probably the most important
yes,
thing.
Yes. So these things also are in your life. To give you a better sense and go higher and higher. When I say higher, nothing is low or high, but a deeper state or higher state of consciousness.
Yes.
So everything in your life comes for that, for you to grow from it. So there is no accidents or it's not just happening. So even that is a stepping stone for you to move upwards.
Definitely. So would you say that a person becomes increasingly non-conflicted within through the five pillars? Could you say something about
less conflicted?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So would you talk about that a little
bit? So yes, it doesn't bother them. I shouldn't say it doesn't bother them. I think it's just different. The experience of how you feel towards the other person is a little different from what you would have felt otherwise.
So like a response of compassion, yes. More tolerance.
There's more compassion. There is more almost sense of you could be that person. You can actually feel their misery, or you can feel their suffering, so much that you can actually, I think at some level I have not experienced that, but you can transmute it for them and help them, feel differently. Otherwise, what happens is you kind of build that wall and you say, you know what, exactly. It's more for self-defense, not self-defense, but protecting yourself, because you're afraid that if you feel like that, you're going to be also suffering with them. That's different from feeling for them and actually helping them move forward.
Very much so. So it seems that there's great power in compassion, forgiveness, tolerance, looking at other people's points of view. Absolutely. Which is also, I think, very rare at times. I mean, I don't know how rare it is really, but when you talk about these five pillars, there's meditation, mm-hmm. introspection. Mm-hmm. It seems like introspection implies looking at other people's points of view also. So yeah. Could you say something about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why, you are in a better state to understand where somebody's coming from or what they're going through.
And why is that important? I mean, why should I, as Sachin, understand why somebody, what is somebody else's perspective? How does that benefit me?
It would benefit you because you can bring about more compassion in, for them. And that is very healing for that other person.
And that clear space you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. So it's not you're going to be attached to their suffering.
No.
But you're going to feel it so deeply that you are actually going to bring about healing in that other person. Because you're at a state where you're more integrated, so you'd make a difference like that. Mm-hmm. That's what all the ancient, Jesus did, and all the other deities and everything. Yes. How did they heal people? Was because they were so integrated within themselves that, and not a sense of selfishness, mm-hmm. that they were completely out there for others, so they could actually help them, uplift them, in their consciousness. So that's what you can do.
And you had also mentioned about forgiveness, mm-hmm. in some of these workshops before. Mm-hmm. So that that forgiveness is also part of self-introspection. I remember you saying this before, that if a person forgives themselves, then you're forgiving the outside. Could you just, we'll kind of close with this, perhaps.
Yes. So the thing is, When I'm saying that self-forgive ourselves, again, we haven't known ourselves enough. You're thinking from your mind perspective and how your actions in the past, and you don't want to let go of it. And you want to keep punishing yourself for whatever reason and feeling guilty about these things. And so that's the first step, to say everything is done. That is also for my growth, mm-hmm. whatever happened. And I have to move on. I have to let go, because then I'm evolving and going up, to the higher consciousness.
Okay, that sounds very good. Thank you very much, Dr. Chetna, for all of this. Just one final thing here. As we're closing this recording on the five pillars, is there anything in summary you would like to say as just a concluding statement on the five pillars?
Yeah, so the whole idea is, when you live your life, you want to keep reflecting on all these things as you go along. It just helps you keep moving forward, growing forward. But I don't want people to think that this is all you're going to think about. This is not with the mind we're talking about.
Right.
So it's not the mind to become exhausted and saying, I have to do this, I have to do this. This is more a journey. So at periods of time, if you just put the basic tools in place, and like I said, just being aware, just awareness is good enough. Because when you're aware, you can change things. Mm-hmm. And you move, kind of like a smoothly through life. Otherwise, it could be different. So we just don't want to feel that, oh my God, this is like a burden on me. So that is what I would say.
Okay. Thank you very much.